Welcome to MGO HockeyCast 1.3. Yes, it is still HockeyCast, but it should not be 2 hours long this time. We had so much fun yesterday talking about such a fun weekend. We thought, you know what, why don't we come back and try another one? We could talk about hockey this time. And there's going to be probably some openings this week in terms of slots to put in some content. So we're going to bring up a few hockey games. I brought Anthony along with me, and we're going to dissect maybe the last month of Michigan hockey.
Yeah, hello. Happy to be here again.
Yeah, we both sound like it. So we thought we would go through each of the series. Michigan played a few, played Notre Dame, Penn State, and Wisconsin, and we go kind of through each series and look at the games as to sort of how they played out and what the numbers said and what Michigan kind of expect. And then after we get through all of that, we'll just kind of piece together a few takes on the team in terms of some maybe some lines or some players here or there or maybe a direction or something to look for in the coming weeks before for the GLI. So, at the end of the last one, this is the third one?
This is our third podcast.
Wow.
I can't
believe we've got three done like a month and a half, 2 months?
We did a preview.
We
did one to cover the very long non-conference season.
the four-hour podcast.
And now we are covering the first 3 weekends of the conference season.
Big Ten season, yeah. So, we kind of previewed Notre Dame before at the very end of our last podcast, if you were able to get all the way to the end of it. So, we'll start there. Michigan played the Friday night game. I thought maybe their best game of the season, and maybe one of the best games I've seen them play, including the tail end of last year. So Michigan kind of got off to a slow start and gave up a goal, but then ended up taking the lead, and it was a little bit reminiscent of the second time Notre Dame came to Yost last year, where Michigan had a one-goal lead going into the third. Their defense was a little bit shaky in the non-conference, and you're kind of sitting there being like, uh-oh, you know, this is going to be one of those hang-on-to-your-seats, how-fast-can-the-clock-go game, and they just punked him in the third period. I remember just watching Strauss Mann, who was starting in net, something we probably get to a little bit later, but just stand in his crease as the puck, I think, maybe entered the zone maybe like 5 or 10 times throughout the entire period. Notre Dame couldn't get the puck. They couldn't even get really a shot. I think they ended up with like 3 even strength attempts on net in the third period or something like that. I wrote it down. It was absolutely phenomenal. One of the best defensive periods I've seen Michigan play maybe ever.
Yeah, the shots were 16-2 in the third.
Oh, there you go.
The big takeaway from that for me was that Notre Dame, last year when Notre Dame was coming back,
right,
trying to come back at least, Michigan was hanging out for dear life.
Right. I mean,
it was a really tense third period, at least the last 10 or 15 minutes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and they had like a couple shots go wide.
Yeah.
And pucks just trickling, got a little bit lucky.
Yeah. Michigan probably shouldn't have won that game.
Yeah.
This game, Michigan put the clamps down, and they, instead of sitting on the lead, they stayed aggressive and kept the puck in Notre Dame's zone the whole time, and Notre Dame was not able to actually try to come back. They were just playing defense the whole time. So Michigan not being able to score a whole lot on 5-on-5 was still able to keep the puck, you know, in Notre Dame's end and not allow Notre Dame to have any kind of cohesive attack in the third period.
Yes, and that was surprising. I mean, and not surprising because, you know, we talked about this earlier where coming into the season, these are kind of the type of games that Michigan is going to have to play with the roster that they have, with the talent and the statistics that they have on the team. They'll maybe eke out an even strength goal or two, hopefully maybe potentially add something on the power play, and get 2 to 3 goals, and then they have an experienced goalie, they have a talented freshman goalie, and they have a ton of drafted defensemen. And that's just kind of, when you have that roster makeup and you don't have 2 or 3 elite lines, that's how you have to play. And they didn't really do that too much throughout the non-conference, especially against maybe the better non-conference teams. But then Notre Dame comes into town, and this is like, wow, Notre Dame's probably a top-10 team. And they just, when the period came down where Notre Dame needs to start being more aggressive, taking more chances, Michigan basically just said no.
It really felt like you said, the best game they've played all year, but the way they want to play.
Right.
Right. And a glimpse into the future of what the program's going to look like. Especially once they kind of filter in a few more recruits and whatnot, like not sitting on leads, which was really impressive to me, and being aggressive throughout the whole game, which is hard to do, frankly. It's hard to stay up on that type of thing, and it's hard to not be, I wouldn't say complacent, but cautious a little bit. You know, when you get a lead, you tend to want to protect.
Right.
And Michigan protected by staying aggressive and not giving Notre Dame the chance to mount an offense.
Keeping the ball, so to speak.
Right. It was a really, really impressive game from the staff, from the coaching staff, quite frankly. And, you know, from the players. Be able to do that against a team of Notre Dame's caliber. And Notre Dame didn't really play as great as they could have, but to be able to do that, it was really impressive. That was quite a game to watch.
Unfortunately, there was a game the next night that followed, and this was we kind of talked about how it's just tough to follow college hockey in general, and even Michigan, who's probably one of the top 3 to 5 big name schools with followings around the country that people are going to tune into regardless, because they're just known. Mm-hmm. And you still have to get them on BTN Plus, which is marginally acceptable to an extent. The problem is that the feed didn't pick up until like the second period. And I remember it was after the Rutgers football game, and I was listening to the first period because obviously I wasn't watching it. And Michigan jumped out to a 1-0 lead on the power play. They had a second puck go in the net that was called back. They dominated that first period until near the end when Notre Dame started turning the tide, got a couple goals. And then it almost seemed like the wheels came off, because at the start of the second, Notre Dame gets 2 or 3 goals again. The BTN Plus feed finally comes on my TV as I just am like having it over there just in case it happens, paying attention to other stuff. And boom, all of a sudden, like, it turns on and it's 5-1. And it was like, what happened? And all that defense, all that you built up in the first game, obviously Notre Dame's a tough opponent. Teams are going to bounce back when you're really talented. But now all of a sudden you're just in a completely different game.
It was 5 unanswered goals in the span of 18 minutes of gameplay over 2 periods.
Yeah.
And 6 over 1 period of gameplay. And Michigan just obviously couldn't recover from that. They took the early lead on the power play, like you said, Lockwood. And Notre Dame just kind of swarmed them after that. Like, had a lot of success. And it was tough sledding. Michigan outshot them in that game once again.
Yeah.
Notre Dame only had 5 shots in the third. But it just was not Michigan's best game.
Yeah. No, and I think going into that series, you never want to like sign up for a split at home. But given what we saw Michigan in the non-conference, you're thinking, if we can get one of these two, we're not starting in a big hole. We're taking 50% from Notre Dame, who is another conference favorite again. You're kind of signing up for that. But after the way the first game went, you're kind of like, no, that's not okay. Like, you really want to be in that game. And it seemed like after the first period and then a few minutes in the second period, like, it didn't really matter. Right. It was over. You're playing out the rest of the game. Are you going to score 5 goals against Cale Morris? Probably not. And, like, even I'm looking at the
St. Cyr actually played that game.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well,
that's okay.
He's good, too. I mean,
he is good. Former national team goalie.
Right. I'm even looking at the close Corsi right now from that game, which is, I guess they count shots or attempts on net within 1 goal or 2 goals. I don't think it really matters, but when the game is close,
it's 9-8.
Do you have it? Yeah. Right. And I had and Michigan actually like out-Corsied them, so to speak. So it wasn't like they were getting run out of the building. I wish I could comment on the goals specifically. However, they're not viewable. But
this is our plea to put more hockey on TV.
There you go. Right. I mean, that's kind of something that we've been sort of pumping on Twitter for a while, and now we actually have a voice, and maybe a couple of our viewers are out there and be like, you know what, we got to take up a cause. But anyway, so Michigan splits that series. It's a little disappointing the way it ends, but in reality, it's probably a fair split, and in terms of like talent level, it's kind of what you'd probably expect.
It's 100% of a fair split, and honestly, at the beginning of the season and after the non-conference season, I think we're pretty happy with getting a split out of that.
Yep. And then the next weekend is they go to Penn State, and every year I remember just going back there, even from like the first year we had to go there when Penn State was not good at all, and Penn State beat us, and it was like one of their first Big Ten wins, and it was like one of those just frustrating experiences. Whenever Michigan goes to Hockey Valley, things just get weird and they get wild. And Penn State is just, the way they set up their team is, it's almost like watching old school Oregon or kind of Big 12 hockey now. Is, we're going to, defense maybe we'll get around to, but we're going to shoot the puck. We're going to shoot the puck. And then as soon as we get in the zone, we're going to shoot the puck again. And like Corsi goes through the roof in terms of a total attempts, and because they haven't had great goaltending and their defense is a little leaky, they give up goals too. And both of these games were just what was it like? Total, one was 6-4, and the other was like 7-6 or something.
Yeah, it was a shootout. Both of them.
I mean, yeah, shootout to the extreme. Mm-hmm. I think, but I think the more disconcerting thing is after that first weekend where. Especially that first game against Notre Dame where it looked like, okay, this is what Michigan can do with their defense. We didn't see any of that in that second weekend.
That's true. They didn't play very well defensively. Now, to be fair, Penn State is pretty high-powered. They're
right.
One of the highest-scoring teams in college hockey. So you should expect to probably give up more goals to them than you would another team. The first game of the series was pretty impressive to me, frankly, because at the end of the second period, there's about a minute left, and Penn State scored. And it was a bad goal for the team to let up. I don't think it was necessarily a bad goal for the goalie, but it was just a bad goal for the team. It was a turnover.
Disappointing.
And so I thought the game was over.
4-2
going into the second, or going into the second intermission, and you're on the road. And like I said, it was kind of a back-breaking goal, and I just remember being really disappointed. And they came out and scored not only four goals in the third, but they got two even-strength goals, which is a big deal for Michigan because that's actually more than their season average right now. So, I mean, they came out, swarmed Penn State second Friday in a row where they had a great third period and got away with the win in a place, like you said, where they've historically struggled to be good at, let alone win. And they played a pretty good game overall to come out with that.
And then the next night, it was, you know, speaking of, like, kind of redos, which we'll, or deja vus, which we'll get to in the next series, but it was very similar, where Penn State came out really early, scored two goals in the first, like, 5 minutes. Like, I don't think I've even gotten back from the game yet. Like, I was walking back from Indiana, and, like, I'm checking my phone, trying to get back to turn on, and it's already 2-0, and I was like, what in the world? It's, like, 3 minutes into the game. And they were down, I believe, two goals at least three or four different times in that game and came back to tie it at the end, finally eclipsing it. They're always kind of chasing one, but they ended up tying it 6-6 with like a few minutes to go. And I think, if I remember correctly, they had a power play or they had a bunch of just zone time where they had chances to win, even in regulation, in a 6-6 game.
Yeah, I mean, they did come back twice in the last 4 minutes. Or they scored twice in the last 4 minutes.
Yeah, back. Which is...
Yeah, it was impressive as a second game in a row with four goals in the third, number one. They had four even strength goals in the third, which is unheard of for this season, right? And at six for the game, actually. So that was like their biggest outburst of even strength production on this whole season. And they got production from the fourth line. They had two goals from the fourth line in that game as well.
Raby had a really nice snipe, I think, in that game.
Yes, and Van Wy had the goal to take them to 6-5.
Okay.
So it was pretty really great effort in the third. And like I said, 2 days in a row to come on so strong in the third, actually 3 out of 4 games to be so strong in the third.
Yeah.
It was really impressive from them. And they lost, and it wasn't really, like I said, overall a great series for them defensively.
No.
Mann did not really look bad on any of the goals, all like 12 or 13 that he let in, which is astonishing. I mean, it's just sometimes you have those kind of bounces. A lot of them were from right in the slot. A lot of the goals were right in between the hash marks or lower.
Most of them were, I think, that whole weekend, especially on Friday. Yeah.
And they really struggled at keeping Penn State out of the slot, which is bad news for a team. But overall, like I said, to come out with a split in that was pretty good overall series.
Yeah, and it was one of those, again, where it's a little disappointing, too, because you win on Friday, and you're like, man, if we can get anything, even just get to a shootout, get a point, we kind of win this series, so to speak. And then they come back, and then they finally tie it. And you, like, we've been in situations like that in other sports of when you give up at the end of, when you give up your lead at the end of that particular game, and you go to an overtime session, like, you're just kind of almost heartbroken because you're like, we shouldn't even be here. And then
six seconds
into the game, like, you get, like, there's the first rush, a shot, a rebound, and a goal, and you're just like, I mean, I don't even know how to, like, explain that. Like, that's just,
they needed a little bit of a wake-up call defensively after that series, honestly, and, you know, Mel Pearson said the same thing publicly, so it's not like our takes are a little bit off base on that, but they definitely did a pretty poor job of keeping Penn State out of the middle. Now, Penn State is an elite team at doing that, so it might be a sense of they've played so many bad offensive teams early on in the season to see that team after what 10 games of 12 games of you know, mediocre offenses is kind of a shock. And it might have been a lot of lessons learned after that series, but at the same time, it was a pretty good barometer of where they need to be if they want to be an elite team, you know, defensively or an elite team overall. They're going to have to be able to play with teams like that.
And we did see some scoring depth, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Nick Pasta had a couple of goals, mm-hmm. and, like, the fourth line, Van Wyn, Raby had a couple of goals. So it wasn't just either A, all power play, or B, all the SNL line. So, like, that was something good to take away from it. Again, just getting points on Friday, you never want to leave a weekend with just those Friday points. Mm-hmm. But again, on the road, a place you always struggle, it's just, you know, when you come back to tie it and then you go to overtime and, you know, you got to kill 5 minutes and you get a point and then you have a chance for a second to give it away, is just like, it's like you're not quite there. You're almost there, but you're not quite there. So
overall, an excellent, I would say, I don't want to sound hot take because, you know, intangibles are, you know, are pretty important, and they did not quit in either game. You know, they, like I said, the Friday night game, it's 4-2, bad goal into the second. You can fold in those situations. Yep. A lot of teams do. Now in a third, being down two goals with 5 minutes left, or, you know, eight in this instance, but, you know, coming back with four, getting those two goals, that's tough as well. Like, to stick with it in that sense, both nights is really impressive. And like I said, some of the fundamentals are shaky on the back end, especially.
Yeah.
I thought a lot of it was forward play, not necessarily defender.
Okay.
In their own zone.
So like a center coming back, or one of the wings coming and checking
a
guy
on the boards.
Sure.
You know, even just quality passes in the breakouts, good work on the half boards, like those kind of things. I thought as much as the defenders, it was also the forwards, I'm sure they're going to work on that. But it was still really impressive overall to be able to even eke out a split in those scenarios where they're in a bad shape Friday after two.
Yeah.
And, you know, Friday after two, if you were going to say, well, they'll get a win and a tie out of this, or a win and a loss out of this, and very, very close to two wins, it's a pretty good weekend.
And the thing that you have to remember is, like, you know, Michigan seeming like they're in a much better, they've started much better so far this year than they did in the Big Ten last year, where they kind of got run out early and had some really bad series. And they got a couple wins out of a couple lucky bounces and played some teams that maybe weren't gelling yet.
Right.
But, I mean, they look like a team that has lost a lot from last year, but has transitioned smoothly enough into starting to figure out who they are and are playing a little more consistently.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about this in a little bit, but they look more like a program right now than they did last year.
Yes.
Keep in mind, last year at Thanksgiving, after the Thanksgiving games, they were behind Michigan State.
And that's what I mean. They had a very poor start and were able to use that second half to springboard, and we're not even there yet. They still have a couple series, which, again, we'll talk to you about later, but they're in a much better position.
They were in the mid-40s at this point last year, and they're 20 right now.
In pairwise.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, right on the bubble, which is kind of what we were hoping anyway. Yeah. So, well, those are the first two series. We'll take a break now and come back, and we'll look at one last series and then see some of the conclusions that we have and what's going to happen the rest of this half of the season.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com. And we are back. Thanks for joining us at the Michigan Hockey Cast. I am Anthony Ciotti with Dave Nasternak. We are in the Michigan room.
We are. Yes, it's. I walked in and brought the stuff, and the guy was like, "Oh, are you back again?" And I was like, "Yeah, we had so much fun yesterday. We're going to try this again." So he just laughed, and he's a real easygoing guy. Residence's been great. The conference room is fantastic.
Conference room, the hotel itself.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. No, I mean, we even have this whiteboard that we pulled out and have, like, scribbled down all of our notes and set the whole thing up. So, if you have a chance, come stay here. It's real nice. Downtown Ann Arbor.
You make the podcast a professional operation.
I do?
Yes. Well, you amongst others, I'm sure. But.
Well, good. I'll put that on my resume.
So, Wisconsin. It was a pretty, I would say, meh overall weekend to get two ties. Out of two home games, out of a team that you're definitively better than. I would say.
Yeah, I think that Wisconsin's probably a mid to bottom half of the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. And when you host those teams, you want to get
beat them.
4, 5, 6 points. Mm-hmm. You'd rather not get 3, which is what Michigan ultimately got. Mm-hmm. But they played, I think, well enough to win both.
Yes. But I think it might have highlighted some of their deficiencies overall.
Yes.
And as much as the Notre Dame and Penn State series highlighted a lot of the positives, the Wisconsin maintained those positives, but also highlighted, I think, some of the deficiencies overall as we were watching.
Yeah, showed kind of probably what their ceiling is until the year progresses and some players potentially take some jumps. Mm-hmm. This is kind of what they're going to be, mm-hmm. where they still can create on the power play. They didn't get any power play goals. They were, I think, 0 for 10, 0 for 11 on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the Saturday game where they were 0 for 4 in the first period.
They had good power plays, though.
Right. Yeah. But you just mm-hmm. didn't get that bounce.
You're not going to get those bounces sometimes.
And like you and I were sitting next to each other during the Friday game, mm-hmm. and they were mostly dominating the game in terms mm-hmm. of attempts mm-hmm. and in terms of possession. And Levine, who started that series after kind of all the goals in the Penn State series, which we don't really put on man.
Right.
But it's still goals in the net, mm-hmm. and...
And as you're fighting for the starter spot, they're going to give Levine some games too. It's not it's not like Mann didn't lock the drop down with the Penn State.
He played well, I thought, in his games.
Right,
but
got sold out a lot.
Yes,
yeah. So Wisconsin Friday night was 2-2.
Yeah,
it was a pretty interesting game. We saw the first 3-on-3 overtime ever.
That is, I think what I captioned the final of that is like 3-on-3 hockey is some sort of drug.
It really is. I mean, they've been doing it in the NHL for a few years.
They've
been doing it in the OHL for a while, so I've seen quite a bit of it. And there's actually a Twitter feed. I think it's called 3-on-3 Bot. So if you follow it, it'll tell you.
Having
the NHL package, yeah, you can turn on 3-on-3 overtime. And it's always like 9:30, 9:45 at night, and then again at like midnight, 12:30. So you can get your fill of 3-on-3 overtime if you really want, but to see it live is great.
It's like that last hour of Red Zone mm-hmm. where everything is going into the last 2 minutes and just games are bonkers.
Right, but that's a whole hour condensed into 5 minutes. And it's edge of the seat stuff, and teams are playing their best players, and it's just great.
You said something to me during that, and you were like, "Do you know what they're trying to do in this 3-on-3 overtime?" And I was like, "What?" And you were like, not turn the puck over. And
exactly,
it's like, as long as you don't turn the puck over, you're kind of okay. Mm-hmm. You don't even necessarily have to create anything fantastic, but if you just avoid not turning the puck over, you're in like almost just a good position.
A lot of puck movement, a lot of off the puck movement, I should say.
Yeah.
And a lot of, it looks really wide open and it looks really great flow just because there's so much space, but there is a lot of stress put on not turning the puck over. And another great thing about it is these teams really don't practice it all that much. So it gets wild,
And I think that... So it also happened on Saturday. Mm-hmm. But one of the takeaways that I thought... And obviously, if Michigan plays an elite team, they'll be in a little bigger trouble. But when most of the teams Michigan are going to come up against, 3-on-3 is probably going to benefit them. Mm-hmm. Because they're going to have Quinn Hughes. Mm-hmm. And they're basically going to be able to use that top line. Yes. And they'll be able to roll a forward from the bottom three lines if they want to add it. But, I mean, on Friday they played Lockwood and Norris and Hughes, mm-hmm. and it's going to be tough to find three guys in college hockey a whole lot better than that. And all those players can shoot the puck, all those players can carry the puck, and any one of them is a threat to score at any time.
Absolutely.
And when you can play, the majority of 5 minutes with those three guys, your odds of winning that game probably go pretty high.
Right. Michigan's three best players are going to be as good or better than most teams' three best players.
Yeah,
and so it makes it a lot of fun as a Michigan fan and pretty entertaining, and it does give them an edge.
And we talked about, especially the Friday game, probably Saturday game as well too, but the Friday game, Michigan's defense was back to what we saw against Notre Dame.
So they must have made some improvements over the week, yes.
God. I guess you can fix it in a week.
As they said, yeah. I mean, it was really different. It wasn't so much keeping the puck out of Wisconsin's or out of their own end like they did with Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they did play good defense in their own zone. Notre Dame, a lot of Wisconsin shots were on the perimeter.
Yep.
And it was overall a pretty good defensive effort. Levine did not have to make a ton of big saves. A couple here,
he
a couple there.
One very early when somehow there was a turnover and there was two guys alone in front of the net. And I think the puck even went through him and wide.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, everything was from the perimeter.
Right.
Which is what you want.
And I think because of the stress on defense and limiting mistakes, it might have affected them a little bit offensively. Like I said, as we can probably talk about this after, they did dominate possession, Corsi, shot attempts, essentially.
Especially on Friday.
Especially on Friday. I'm speaking mostly of the Friday T2
sure.
game. But a lot of it were, you know, perimeter, hoping for deflections, hoping for tips, and nothing, not a ton from the middle. And so I think that's why you got such a low-scoring game and the 5-on-5 offensive struggles, because there wasn't a ton of risk-taking in the offensive zone. There weren't guys cycling deep too often. It wasn't a lot of passes backwards, you know, unless it's the pasta line, because they work it out to Becker from below the goal line. But overall, it was a lot of trying to get seeing eye shots from the point and trying to get deflections, trying to get pucks to net, basically. And it ultimately worked. They got the 2 points. You know, it would have been nice to get the three, but it was a pretty sound difference from the Penn State series, and probably something they needed to do after the Penn State series to kind of tighten up that defense.
And that's, unfortunately, until you get maybe another jump from some of these players deeper in the lines, that's kind of going to be how they have to win some games. And had they gotten a little better puck luck, I think, especially in the first game, they probably win that game, maybe going away, if they get a couple bounces. I thought Jack Berry played really well.
Berry did
and it was
really well.
Very weird, because when we were looking at the line charts before the game and looking at their goalies, you were like, oh, the new guy that's going to play, he played Saturday night. He's pretty good. And I was like, well, hopefully they play Barry. And he kind of laughed and looked down and like, yeah, his save percentage wasn't that good and his GAA were higher.
Right.
And they played Barry, and then he played really, really well. So
he did play very well. It was the best I've seen him play.
Yeah, because he had a couple of howlers last year too.
Yeah, he did not really look good against Michigan. And I believe, honestly, like, goaltending's probably their number one issue as a team.
Okay.
I think Wisconsin as a program is kind of getting there. And if you look at their save percentage over the last year and this year, it's not where it needs to be. And the other goalie has definitely been a lot better. I think it was like 0.4 of a point higher. So it was a significant difference going into the weekend.
So we kind of summed it up with sort of deja vu, where it seemed like the same thing in both games. But the other thing that relates back to a point we were talking about earlier is Michigan had a very strong third period, especially... Well, actually, in both games, because they were trailing. They were down 1-0 in the first game, and also in the second game, I believe it was 2-0. And they came back and scored 2 third-period goals. Maybe they got one in the late second. Yeah, one of them was in the late second, and then they tied the game in the last, I think, 5 minutes of the game. Luke Morgan had his first goal, which is nice to see him finally score. I think he got in behind the defense and had a semi-breakaway and finished the goal, which is good, because he's one of those guys that you look at who is... He's only in his second year playing, but he's in his third year. He transferred from Lake State. He's kind of been on that third line with a Winborg or a Warren and maybe some of the freshmen that they'll alternate up there. But he's a guy that you think the staff was pretty high on, I think, in the preseason. And if he takes a little bit of a jump or catches some fire or maybe just needs to just put the puck in the net a few times, that's like a guy or a line that could kind of take Michigan's offense to another level.
Yes, they definitely need more production out of the bottom six, maybe even the bottom nine, to be honest. And Morgan coming around would be pretty good, or a Randall or a Moyle. You know, somebody taking that next step over the second half of the season the same way Becker did, I think would be very helpful in the rest of the season. But it was nice to see him score in the third. They did dominate the third period in this the second game. It was 18-9 were shots. First game was only 6-5, which is... pretty low for both teams, but I do think a lot of the attempts were on Michigan's end, on Wisconsin's end of the ice. Just Michigan wasn't connecting on a lot of those. Like, they were missing, missing the net, not getting the tips they were looking for. But I think overall they've played really well in the third periods of the last two weekends. Actually five of the six games in the Big Ten they've played well in the third period.
And that's kind of something that you're looking for. Is, again, that's something else you need with this type of team, is you need to be able to play 60 minutes and you need to be able to finish strong, because you may not get all those goals early, and or you may have them and you need to hold on because there's just not going to be a lot to go around, and they've been able to stay in games and rally back. I mean, this is what, their third or fourth game this year where they've had a deficit in the second half of the game, mm-hmm. so to speak, that they've come back
more than one goal. Yeah,
yeah, and they've stolen points.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, and I do think that the starts to games are starting to get a little bit better. I think they were pretty bad the first month.
Yeah,
in the
Some of those non-con games were just.
And I know they gave up one in the first 6 minutes on Saturday. They gave up the first goal on Friday, but that was like middle of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think overall they're starting to get a little bit better coming out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And if they can put together a full 60 minutes, I think Friday was a pretty good 60 minutes for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though they didn't get the win. Overall, I think they were pretty structurally sound and played pretty good hockey. They, like you said, they just didn't get the bounces, and they weren't able to connect on some of those passes. But, they did control most of that game.
We should talk about that goal on Friday because some people have tweeted at me, and we discussed it a little bit in the box. And so you have a guy rushing in. And the top pairing is out there, and he shoots the puck kind of through Sekone. And mm-hmm. you were talking about how Sekone didn't really play that well mm-hmm. because he sort of screened his goalie mm-hmm. and didn't play up enough and didn't close him down soon
right.
enough.
Uh-huh.
And there weren't – and Hughes is kind of off to the side because it wasn't a real rush. There wasn't two or three people coming in.
It was a one-on-two. So
right.
The initial rush was against Hughes. So,
okay.
Typically, Michigan's been playing pretty aggressive at the blue line.
Mm-hmm.
So the defender with the man with the puck will press the blue line a little bit, try to deny the zone entry or at least hassle. And the way that the other defender will usually play that will kind of clean up the mess. Well, Houston didn't do that really and allowed the shooter, who was Jack Gorniak, to step into the middle. And at that point, Sekone had not stepped up to help Hughes out.
Right.
So Hughes incorrectly funneled him into the middle, and Sekone did not step up. And so it gave a bad screenshot to Levine.
Who made the save?
Made it, cuffed it, I think. It went off his cuff, or like it was...
He lost it under him at some point, mm-hmm. and it kicked out to the side.
Yes. And with the speed, the original shooter was able to go in and slam it home on the side. So I think some people were a little bit disappointed in Levine on that, but that's a difficult play for a goalie. So the shooter, number one, comes in unimpeded from one of the sides
mm-hmm.
and uses the defender as a screen. And the defender sagged off to the gap control is pretty poor. So he sagged off to the point where the shot is coming from inside of the top of the circles
mm-hmm.
off some movement from the point. And if you're not going to see that shot clean, you're probably not going to save it clean. And if they don't hold the shooter, impede him in some way, he's going to get a clean look at the rebound.
Right.
So we don't know. We don't know if Levine was able to see the rebound cleanly, because when you get cuffed like that, sometimes you don't see where the puck falls. So you're not able to track. You're not able to slide. So live, it looks like Levine's just really slow and he didn't even, he didn't make the save. But honestly, that's a really difficult play. And frankly, I thought the defense could have been a little bit better on that.
Well, my sort of takeaway...
It was atypical, honestly, for
yes.
Sekone.
And that was kind of the disappointing thing, was that the goal from the angle is always disappointing. Like, it's
right.
tough to... It sucks to give up a goal when you're basically on the goal line.
You see it all the time, though. I think it's...
Yeah.
I think to an observer, and this is just... Maybe this is the goalie in me, but... To an observer, it looks like a bad angle goal, but there's so many little holes when you're crowding a post.
Mm-hmm.
And shooters nowadays are really, really good. So if you watch, NHL highlights every night, there's bad angle goals.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
honestly, like a lot of stuff that just look absurd, sometimes. Like
okay.
pucks getting under pads, pucks getting right over pads under gloves. It's a difficult thing to do, especially with movement, right? So you're sliding from the top of the crease to the post. You've got to get your toe right inside the post correct every time. And catch that lean correct every time, so you're making the right seal. Sometimes it just doesn't happen. I don't think that was necessarily the case with this goal, because, mm-hmm. like I said, if he doesn't really locate the puck off the rebound, and didn't look like he really saw it coming in, so he cuffs it, like I said, I think it went off his cuff or off his shoulder, something like that. He's not going to know right away where the rebound's going,
right.
So you're not tracking it, you're not moving with it, so you're not leaning into the puck. And if the shooter is unimpeded from that, he steps right by Sekone and Hughes, right in between them, and is able to just kind of chip it in, I'm not going to put that on Levine, honestly.
So the bottom line of this is it's a one-on-two rush. The shooter gets two shots, and neither defender really hit him either time. And that's, the angle isn't great, and the Levine maybe could have done better, but it's a tough situation. But the real bottom line is, when you have one guy coming in against two, the defenders need to take care of him. They need to, either even if you don't funnel him in the right spot and he gets that first shot off, there's no way he should get the second shot.
It's going to be marked.
Especially to the side.
I would assume it's marked as two high danger shots. And to come in off of a one-on-one, or sorry, a one-on-two, where the man coming in didn't even really have the speed or the angle.
Yeah.
It's not really on the goalie.
Yeah. You know. And that's, especially from your top pairing, it's kind of like, that's, yeah. In a game when goals are definitely at a premium, mm-hmm. The taste of that is just kind of sucky. So we've kind of got a little bit into the weeds with that. We want to finish with just some overall takes as to kind of what we're seeing from the team. We both have a couple guys that we thought played well. And we're going to look at maybe some of the lines and stuff. First thing I want to say is, and you mentioned, you know, this is a goalie in you. So which goalie are you leaning towards right now?
I had been leaning towards Mann because he had been, I think, had been playing better in his starts. Levine's performance on the weekend, you know, muddles that a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think that Levine is kind of getting back to the level he was at last year, which was
for their stretch run.
Yes, for their stretch run when he took the job from LaFontaine in January, February-ish. And I think that having two goalies playing well, obviously, is really important.
Oh, yeah.
So Mann is, as he has kind of gotten used to the college game coming from the USHL, he's looked pretty good. Like I said, in the Penn State series, I don't really put a lot of those goals on him. A couple of them were weird bounces. A lot of stuff from front of the net. He basically got sold out all weekend.
Yeah.
And it's rough to play behind games, like, especially against a team like Penn State. And he has looked good in the other games, though. He looked good in the Notre Dame series. He's looked good, you know, overall. So... I think they're starting to get into the point where it's a good problem to have rather than a shaky question mark-ish type problem. And I think with the games they have coming up going into Christmas, it's going to solidify even more. I think the goaltending is going to be seen as maybe less of a weakness as we get into the GLI.
Okay, and then so they've moved Slaker up to the top line. It's the SNL line, Slaker, Norris, Lockwood. Mm-hmm. It's looked really good.
Yes.
It's what they use on the power play. Mm-hmm. They've scored a lot of power play goals. Unfortunately, they couldn't get one last weekend, which probably would have changed both one or more of those games. Mm-hmm. But the second line is they put the Pasta line back together. Mm-hmm. Put them with Jack Becker. You got two brothers that have been playing together probably their entire lives. They look good at the end of last year, fit them together. And there's not a lot of maybe high-end talent on that line, but they kind of are a high energy effort line, and especially in that Penn State series, found the net a few times.
It's an interesting line, and there's a whole thing I wanted to get in about Mel's strategy with all this and how he's kind of created the system around this team, but I'll get into this line in particular. The entire line's built around Becker, which is really interesting.
Okay.
Becker's real skill is around the net play. So he's very good in close. He's got a pretty good shot in close. He converts pretty well. He's mm-hmm. good with deflections. He's good facing the net. He's good back to the net. And they've really focused on that with this line. So you'll see them go behind the net quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So one of the brothers will be, and they're trying to feed Becker. And it's a really good strategy. It's working. It's been pretty productive for them. And they're able to maintain that without giving up a lot defensively. So they're not making bad passes coming out and starting rushes.
Right.
It's a really, really good thing they've got going on with that line. And we said that last year. We thought maybe it would develop into like a really quality line for, what, 3.5 seasons?
Yeah.
You know, or 2.5 seasons?
Yeah.
And it's looking that way. And it's really fascinating to me because that line plays differently than the other ones. And it's completely okay. I mean, it's honestly preferable because it's quite effective, but it's really, to me, impressive that the staff has basically three different, like, offensive systems, I would say, in a way.
Okay. Based on who's going to be on the ice.
For lack of a better term.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So the Norris line is your traditional possession, you know, zone exit, zone entry, get the puck down the ice, and it works because they're relatively elite. I wouldn't say completely elite, but, like, high-end college hockey line,
yep.
right? And they're usually paired with Hughes
and Ciccone.
Right. So that in itself is
those. I mean, that's your power play,
right? Yeah, and even strength, they're really effective that way. The Becker line is maybe chip it, dump it, whatever, but getting into the corner or behind the net. Sometimes they do some entries. It just depends on where the puck originates from. You know, they will chip it in though, and they are working from behind the net. more often than not, or the side, trying to get the puck to Becker in front, basically.
Yeah.
And it's been pretty effective, and they've scored pretty good amount as well, not to the same extent that
sure.
the first line has. And then you see the bottom six, which is chip, dump, and get something out of it, maybe get a greasy goal. And then, honestly, for what they have, that's an excellent strategy. And my biggest takeaway on the season is they've constructed this thing where no matter who's on the ice, they have their thing, and it's really effective, and they're able to get maximum production out of the talent they have and the players they have.
And that's coaching.
100%. And it's been probably the thing that's impressed me most about Pearson so far is you didn't really see a whole lot of that last year as much, I don't think. But coming into the season, like it's been really strong revelation for me that they've been really, really good with this. And it's going to get better. You know,
yeah.
But if this is how they have to live for the foreseeable future, it's pretty darn good. I mean, it's not ideal. You probably, as a whole, want to have a team that can play possession hockey the entire game.
Sure.
But for what they have, they're very effective with it. And the numbers are showing it. You know, the possession numbers, they're not getting the 5-on-5 goals that they'd really want to. We can kind of get into that. And I think some folks might see it as a cynical approach because there's a lot of chipping and dumping, and you typically see that with bad teams or poorly coached teams.
Yeah.
But it's really, really effective compared, you know, for the personnel they have. And so I think that it's really a good strategy for the way they're doing things. And on, like I said, it's been effective. The possession numbers show it. None of the lines you are afraid of. You're not afraid of the Van Lye line being on the ice. You're not afraid of the Winborg/Morgan line being on the ice. Like they're pretty strong with the way they're playing, and they're tailoring their system to their players, which is usually the mark of a good coach.
Yeah, that's exactly what we want. And when you mentioned that fourth line with Van Wy and Raby, they use them. They're one of their top penalty killing units mm-hmm. too, and they're very high energy line. Raby is got to be one of the faster players on the team. He's turned a couple of those into goals, mm-hmm. and you can just see him and Van Wy on the forecheck a bunch of times. The one or two shifts, maybe even a period, they'll trap guys in the zone and force turnovers. And, you know, are they great looks or great A scoring opportunities? Maybe not, but it's the fourth line. And are you expecting, like, to get a bunch of goals from your bottom two lines? Not really. But if they can chip in and at least pressure the other team, like, now you're forcing other teams to sort of prepare for that, and it just gives more time and energy for your top two lines. And the top line, as they get time, is going to score some goals. So
I think we've seen an improvement in the power play and penalty kill percentage, even
yes.
since the non-conference, since our last podcast.
Yes.
Penalty kills now middle of the pack, which is a big difference from being
the
one
70%.
Of the worst. Yeah, like just super bad last year. And power play is in the top 15-ish, I believe. So they've improved on special teams, and I think that might be part of the reason they've seen an improvement in the record as well. But it's a lot of just personnel deployment, tailoring the system to the personnel. I mean, like they keep the first line intact. They don't play four forwards on the first power play, and it makes sense for them. You know, partially because Hughes is essentially a forward.
But yeah.
In a lot of ways, a lot of what they're doing, when you look at it, it makes sense. And
yep.
that's really all you can ask for out of a coach, and I give those coaching staff a ton of credit for it.
So you've also mentioned to me over the past few weeks that there's a couple players that you kind of liked. You're kind of going on, as we're sitting there on Friday, mm-hmm. about Randall a little bit and some mm-hmm. of the things you saw in his game.
Yeah, Randall's got some flashes. He hasn't played a ton. He's gotten a little bit of time on that second line.
Mm-hmm.
He stepped in for, I believe, Michael
okay.
in a couple games. He definitely, you can see the skill there. So he had a couple really good shot attempts. I believe it was in one of the Penn State games. And he did make some things happen on the Friday night game as well
mm-hmm.
when he was out. Without Slaker, they were able to fit him in the lineup. I think Van Wy is kind of finding his feet a little bit as a fourth line center.
Mm-hmm.
Morgan's definitely finding his feet a little bit playing on that line with Winborg. So I think some of the players are starting to come around. Blankenberg.
Yeah, he's the other guy that you mentioned.
Initial viewing when they were playing the national team, like I said, that was a different game though because it's a high-powered junior team. It's a different game than a college game.
And it's an exhibition mm-hmm. where...
And he was still only his like second or third game.
Right, and the coach might have completely different goals in winning mm-hmm. that game.
Right. So, but he didn't really look fast or able to stay up to game speed, but he looks pretty slick now. Kind of like Langless a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what it reminds me a little bit. And not because of the diminutive stature, I think. It's just overall like the skating stride, the way he plays a little bit. I think the puck movement's pretty good, and I think that he's done pretty well in that pairing with Boca. And mm-hmm. I think it's made them it's given them a good option on defense.
So it's not because they both wore seven.
No.
Okay.
Definitely.
Well, I wasn't sure. Maybe you just I didn't know how you rationalized.
No, but I think that and Lockwood's looked good coming back as well. So
well,
I think that's another positive. He is scoring, I think, at a slightly above a point per game clip, which is good. Norris is obviously leading the team. They do have a few players over a point per game, which is pretty good.
Yeah, and that was one of the things we talked about with Norris. If he's going to be on that top line, mm-hmm. he's going to have to finish some goals, especially if there's not a lot of elite goal scorers, and he's right. kind of maybe turning into one. He's taken quite a jump this year. Right. I mean, just him in and of his game, when you see him with the puck, when you see him getting into places, when you see him dishing it to other people, he was very good defensively last year, and you saw some flashes, but now he's starting to become that player that is worthy of a first-round pick.
Yes, and I will say another thing is, and we mentioned this last year towards the middle end of the season, is the cohesiveness that you get from keeping lines together.
Yeah.
So Mel isn't juggling lines a whole lot. He might switch guys in and out a little bit.
But for the most part, the skeletons are staying together.
And we've been tracking this all season, and their lines have pretty much been the same since day one. So, like, I think the top line's been the same for all but two of the games. The Pasta line's been the same for all but three or four of the games.
Yeah.
You know, it's been pretty much true down the line. At least two of the three guys in each line has been the same.
Yeah.
The defense pairings have been pretty much the same almost the entire season. So you're seeing a lot of cohesion. And if you're going to do what they're trying to do, where each line has their own thing, they're pretty effective with it. And they're also really effective at limiting transition and negative scoring plays in the transition and bad stuff coming back.
Okay.
You're starting to see a lot of that, and a lot of that is good coaching, good structure, and it's really helping them overcome some of the deficiencies they have. And frankly, their deficiency is they just don't have enough offensive shooting power. And it's not – I don't think this is a bad luck thing. They just don't have enough guys that can put the puck in the net. They don't have enough guys that can pick a corner. And their 5-on-5 scoring reflects that. If you take out the Penn State series, they're bottom 10 in 5-on-5 goal differential.
Yeah.
And to be able to be a viable, like, bubble team with that kind of deficiency is really impressive from the coaching staff. I don't think it's going to get better either. Like, they might have a couple weekends like Penn State, but I don't necessarily think they have a ton of the scoring touch to be able to consistently score like Penn State does.
It's going to need a lot of 2 and 3 goal wins.
Right. And they're going to, maybe they'll have better power play weekends, better luck on the power play. But I think they're going to probably not be super strong in a goal differential sense on 5-on-5 the whole season. And the way they're going to survive is number one, special teams, and number two, limiting bad goals 5-on-5.
Yes.
You know,
that's key.
They're getting there. You can see what they're trying to do. You can see the system developed around that. And it's really intelligent. It's really smart. And honestly, we're probably going to see it for a couple of years, mm-hmm. given where they're at now, the recruiting classes they have coming in. Like, it's probably going to be this way for a year or two. And honestly, if they can handle it, and that's what the coaches do, you know, honestly, the old saying is what the coach is paid for.
Yeah.
I mean, he's earning his money, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really, really good coaching performance so far.
He's maximizing what he has in front of him.
And it's amazing to see. Like, you see that with, the other, Beeline does that.
Yeah.
It's really fun to watch that. And honestly, like, it's been a really, really impressive thing for me is getting that out of this collection of players and having them play so well together. And we saw it starting middle of the season last year, and it's continued now. And you see that they know the players pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think it's a really, really intelligent way to do things, given what they have.
So the last thing I wanted to get from you is, so they changed a rule this year where you can dress an extra skater.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've kind of gone back and forth between defenseman and attacker. And I mean, you can obviously do that, but I just wondered what your take was on how would you generally approach that? Like, obviously, if you have certain situations, you need to tailor it. But in general, what should we be looking for when we're looking for that extra guy on the ice? Uniform.
It's handled differently. In an international game, you can dress extra skaters, so it's a lot of it's specialists sometimes.
Okay.
Recently, it's been Olmstead that's been dressing, sometimes Randall. And on defense, sometimes it's been Summers.
Right.
And so we've seen a little bit of different looks. The Olmstead was interesting on Friday because they had him up on the top line a little bit.
So yes, he was playing.
Warren was officially listed as a top line winger, but Olmstead probably played half the time.
At least.
So it's pretty interesting. Each coach handles it differently. So this, a lot of the stuff I see, the seventh defenseman will be mixed in with the first, the top guy every now and then, to give him some time, and also to get the top guy extra time. Michigan's a lot more static with their lines, so they'll mix in the 13th forward, you know, with the fourth line.
With the fourth line, yeah.
Not really a specialist, not really, you know, anything other than just basically an extra skater.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not done as strategically deployed as sometimes you would see in an international game, I would say.
Okay.
But it's getting experience. So a lot of the guys they're dressing are new. They're rookies.
So trying to see if you can catch a spark from somebody or give as many people ice time and give them a chance to make plays.
A couple shifts a period. You know? And it's handy to have if there's an injury.
Sure.
You know, so I think it's useful, you know, overall.
So we've seen almost all of the conference now. They have a home and home with Michigan State this weekend, and then they host Minnesota next weekend. Both of those teams have – Michigan State has probably improved a little bit from last year. Mm-hmm. Still not where they would like to be, obviously.
They have one of the top scorers in the country.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's like one line and then very little.
Right.
And Minnesota has been down from what they have been previously, just kind of fading away. I think obviously they'll get better because they have a good coach, but there's not quite as much talent there, you've mentioned. So Michigan does have four games, three of them at Yost in the next 2 weeks, and chance to pick up some really big Big Ten points going into the GLI. In, I think they're in third right now. The games played is off, so you know you have to look at points per game and all that stuff. But they're not in a bad situation, especially if they can get, I would say, you know, especially three, if not, you know, a couple sweeps against teams that they probably are better than.
Yes, I would hope that they can get 9 points out of the next four games. And you would
especially prefer, with 3 games at Yost.
Yes, and 3 games against teams that, frankly, they're not just better than. Like Wisconsin, they're better than Wisconsin, right?
Okay.
A little bit.
Yep.
They're a lot better than Michigan State and Minnesota right now.
Yeah.
And
losing those at home to teams.
That would not be good.
Yeah.
Especially after drawing twice this weekend.
Yeah.
That would be not good. And Minnesota, I think, in a lot of ways, is kind of like Michigan last year. They had a coach who, they brought in a new coach. Now, I was not a fan of Don Lucia.
Right.
So I'm not going to put him in the same class as like Red, like, because it's not like that. But they made this change, and it mirrors Michigan in the sense where they have a new coach, new system, and taking over existing players. And Michigan had a really hard time in the first half last year. Mm-hmm. Like I said, they got to Thanksgiving and they were like in the mid 40s.
Yeah.
Right. And you saw after not only after GLI, but I think it was the first series of the second half when they really clicked. They had a really bad series after the GLI, and then they came into the Notre Dame series, if I'm not mistaken, and played really well.
Well, they had a really bad GLI.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And so then Notre Dame, they played well, but won neither game.
Mm-hmm. And so they started in the second half. Getting Minnesota now, Minnesota is really bad right now. With Bob Motzko, they're probably going to be better when they see them in Minneapolis in the second half. They really need to take advantage and get 6 points out of that because they look pretty dismal, to be honest with you. They split with Michigan State this past weekend.
They lost at home to St. Lawrence.
Yeah. That's pretty bad.
I mean, Michigan dominated St. Lawrence. I think they got a goal and like doubled them up in Corsi both nights.
And that was when Michigan wasn't even playing that well.
Right.
And they're playing much better now, as would be expected as the season gets going. They really need to get 9 points out of this. And yep. I think Michigan State is the days of Michigan State being like a joke are over.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be a hard fought.
And
know,
Michigan
games.
Still always struggles at Munn. even against the bad Michigan State teams, they it's not like they've gone in there and cleaned up.
Right. And Michigan State's going to have a plan. They have a good coach. There's going to be structure. To split that would be, you know, it's, I mean, not, both's always preferable, but yeah. I'm not going to expect them to sweep Michigan State anymore.
Yeah.
They really need to sweep Minnesota. Like yep. Minnesota is not good right now. And they're 3 points behind both Ohio State and Notre Dame, so they sit squarely in third right now in the Big Ten. They have games in hand on Penn State and Minnesota, so that they're basically even with Penn State and Minnesota. But to keep pace with the top teams, they're really going to need to get nine.
Yeah, you got
to
clean up against the guys that are not going to probably make the tournament.
Right.
So that should bring you up to speed, mostly on Michigan hockey. Mostly positives. Always some areas to grow, but encouraged. Could have done a little bit better. I think this weekend would have been ended a little more positive note. But we found like a lot of little specifics that I think that they've improved on. And a couple series coming up that they can be successful in. After those series, we'll probably try to get together again before the GLI sometime before Christmas and get one more podcast out so we know what to expect heading into the second half.
Thank you for listening to the MGO HockeyCast. I am Anthony Ciotti with David Nasternak, and we almost made it through the whole podcast without making a kiss your sister joke after those ties.